From a competition to a pleasure hunt and all the stops in between, we cover it all here at Coon Hunting Media.
Outlaw Light Company, owned by Alan Roberts. Located in 10 Mile, Tennessee. 25 years of light building experience. With the newest addition to their lineup, the Ace Pro. They are constantly striving for the best parts. The Ace Pro has better switches and batteries, and it has the option of double walk light and two additional color modules, main beam and a green laser, or a single walk light with three color modules, main beam and a green laser. All their lights are known for dependability and extreme brightness. Contact Outlaw Lights for their complete light selection. Their direct business number is 423-453-8813. The Ace Pro. The light with a lifetime warranty.
Briar Creek Kennels, feed and hunting supply store, owned by Chris Girth, located in Hemera, Indiana. Briar Creek carries all your pet supplies and is the headquarters for all your hunting dog gear. Never get caught in the dark. They carry Outlaw Lights, Superior Lights, and their own Briar Creek Light brand. They are an authorized Garmin and Dogtra dealer. They offer hunting apparel by Yoder Nylon, Southside Hunting Gear, Dan's, Razor, and their own Briar Creek branded gear. Dog boxes include Old Dry Pond and Diamond Deluxe, AGM thermals, engraved nameplates, dog collars and leads, are just a few of the many other offerings you can get from Briar Creek. Visit the store in person or shop online at www.shopbriarcreek.com or check them out at the major events. Their direct business number is 812-383-9489. Briar Creek Kennels Feed and Hunting Supply Store.
Welcome back to another Coon Hunting Media podcast. We are joined by the full gang. We got Stacy, Johnny, and Jason. And before we get into this episode, here's a verse of the week.
You all know we're getting ready to come up and celebrate Easter, so I picked a verse I thought was fitting for Easter. It says, "He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful man and crucified, and on the third day risen again." So for Easter, that's why we celebrate Easter, on our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ was crucified and rose upon the third day, having taken over the keys to death, hell, and the grave.
All righty, y'all ready to dive in on this one? You got some technical difficulties over
there? I did. My headset was all twisted up.
I wonder who set them up.
That would be Mr. Kyle. All
right, if y'all hear anybody hacking over here, we got Stacy. He's got some lung problems. You going to make it on us?
Like walking pneumonia.
Like what?
He's been sick for like 3 weeks.
Pneumonia?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
That's a thing. I was in the hospital at 3 o'clock Sunday morning.
He was.
And nobody told anybody.
We all knew about it.
Jason knew about it. He come and got my boy.
I came and picked him up and had to go buy his dinner. He tried to pay. I didn't let him.
Hey, you raised him right.
That's right.
He's the type, though, he offers to pay, but he knows he ain't going to, actually.
Well, Jason never pays for nothing. So.
No, I don't. I drove his truck tonight. I've not put any fuel in it yet. What are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, we've had a lot of people, listener questions coming in saying, that they're enjoying the episodes, but we've got a lot of non-competition coon hunters listen to this, and we start talking about all these hunts and stuff, and they don't really know all like the basic rules and stuff that goes into a hunt, so we're going to touch on that and give a lot of the non-competition people an outside look on the rules.
So this might be one of those for all the people that listen that do hunt, probably would be boring maybe, but we'll get into some of the basics of competition hunting. I think we should talk a little bit about, you know, if you decided you wanted to go competition hunting and get into it, what are kind of the things you need to do and prepare for that? Because there's nothing worse than going to your first competition hunt and not having a clue what's going on. You get, no. You feel like you get took advantage of.
Another thing is a lot of the public that I work for, I'll talk to them about hunting on land and explain about the competition hunting. And we don't want coons killed. Well, that's not what the competition hunting is. We don't kill the goons. We treat them go on, like playing golf. It's all done by scorecard. And most of them like that.
That's true. A lot of them don't have a clue. They don't understand that it's a big golf game really going on.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people is talk to me and they know I go to all these hunts over the country and they'll be like, so how many coons did y'all kill? I'm like, we don't kill none. What do you mean you don't kill none? You're coon hunting. We just score them and go on.
No, that's it. So let's get into that. So my opinion as far as if somebody wanted to go competition hunting, what do you boys think? I believe they should, first thing is get a rule book, whether that's PKC, UKC, get you a rule book, and if you don't learn those rules, you might as well not go. That's the first thing you need to do beforehand, at least the basics of it. If you don't know the basics of it, you're in for a long night the first time or two.
The biggest thing on why we encourage that is if you don't know the rules, especially the basic ones, when you go to a hunt, you're going to think you got cheated every time. Which really and truly, 95% of the time it comes down to, you just didn't know the rules. And a lot of it could have been prevented. And I think it deters a lot of people away from getting into competition hunting due to the fact of them not knowing the rules and thinking they're always getting cheated. So that's one.
Well, I mean, it's like any other sport, too. If you go to a football game or a basketball game, anybody listening has been to a ball game like that with somebody that don't know the rules to that sport. And it's real hard for them to follow and understand it. But once they understand the rules, everything starts making sense.
Yeah. It'd be like if you was playing basketball and you didn't know what double dribble was, and the ref was calling it on you every time, you think, man, this ref's over here, he's screwing me. Mm-hmm. Every time I get the ball, he's making a call on me. Once you realize what she's doing wrong, then you don't have to make that mistake again.
Mm-hmm. Right, so how you boys want to lay that out? Kind of just go through the format of a competition hunt first?
Yeah, we can. I guess the biggest thing would be strike, which is...
I would even start before that. Before just kind of how do you lay a competition? What happens when they go to somebody that's never been, that we're going to take them to a hunt? What are they going to see and how they're going to do it? Draw the dogs out and then kind of go from there.
Explain. Well, you get to a hunt and they'll everybody pay their entry fee and they'll put everybody in a pot and they'll randomly draw cast. A cast of dogs is mainly four dogs, but if you got uneven numbers, then they could be 2, 3, to 4 dog cast. And a cast is pretty much you're competing against everybody at that club far as score-wise, but you're competing against the dogs in your cast, if that makes sense, when you draw out. And
you got registered class, and you got a night champion class, and UKC.
That's in UKC.
And then you draw everybody in PKC. Unless it's a UKC slam, then you draw everybody.
Yeah, you get into those details, you got the different levels of the UKC hunts. And like I said, PKC, you're going against everybody. But even in UKC, it is separated. But when you get into the slam hunts or the regional qualifying events and the bigger hunts, then you start having to compete against. You may go in there with a registered dog that's never seen a hunt in its life, and you may draw out with a top-notch Grand Night dog that's winning all over the country. So you got to kind of know the hunt you're going to.
Yeah, just regular, like a regular club hunt, UKCU, they usually do registered cast, and then they do a night champion cast. And night champion cast can be nights or grand nights because they are on the same rules as far as minus points and things like that, off game and stuff like that. You get scratched for, which you don't in registered cast. You just get minus points in that. And PKC, it don't matter. You don't get scratched for off game. you just get minus points.
Yeah. And the way they separate them dogs to be the champion division, you have to have at least 5 wins on your dog's record to be able to move into the champion division. And if you got less than 5, you'll be in a registered division. So,
so we went to a hunt. We paid our money, and we're sitting back waiting. So they're going to tell them what they're going to do, Kyle.
They'll assign judges, which is mainly in a lot of the local events, they'll be hunting judges, which means that judge will have a dog in your cast. And they'll draw them out randomly. There's no place dogs on there. They're all randomly drew. And they'll let you know where you're going as a guide. A lot of times you'll have a hunting guide as well. And everybody load up, and they'll drive to the hunting spot, and everybody get their dogs collared, which means everybody's using tracking systems nowadays. Everybody have their tracking collars on and stuff. And another thing is, I've had this question a lot, and I never did think about it, but they asked me, does everybody have everybody's tracking collars on their Garmins? And the question to that would be, no, you've got your dog and your dog only, so you're watching your dog. But I never did think about that, but it kind of does make sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's moving into the modern era that you can put everybody's collars on there where you couldn't in the days gone by.
Before you pass the collar issue, though, break it down about the shocking and non-shocking collars. What's loud with the shocking collars?
Oh, he's talking about like when we go. So most everybody's got a Garmin nowadays, and they've got they can shock their dog with a 25 series or, a 20 series won't and so forth.
Yeah, so in UKC, the United Kennel Club, you can technically run a shocking collar, but you cannot have a handheld that has got the ability to
control it,
which means they make handhelds, Garmin does. They're a 320 and a 430, which means it don't matter if you have a collar on the dog that is able to stimulate, you cannot do it through that handheld. So they're legal in UKC. In Pro Sport and PKC, you cannot have prongs on a dog at all. It has to be a straight T5 collar or a T20 collar. So
I guess and that's a big deal because that can be checked. A judge has the authority to check that and ask that question, and you've got to be able to change it.
If you get caught using the prescribed systems, you will be. It's a mandatory forfeit.
That's a good point, though, for somebody that's just getting in, wanted to go. Because like me and my buddies, we've been hunting, and I'm some young guy, and I've been buying my stuff up. I probably didn't know or think about it. I need to buy multiple collars or whatever. But because anybody I'm going to recommend,
they'll have a shock.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend if you're going to go out and buy a system, you need that if you're pleasure hunting, training dogs, and all that. Yeah. But if you're going to start competition hunting, you got to be able to keep those two separate.
Yeah, actually, that happened at the Winter Classic. Boy in our cast, in one of our casts at the Winter Classic, his son had got scratched, and we had to explain that to him. He said, we just bought the system and bought it, and it had prongs on it, and he had a 300 handheld. And we explained to him that, you have to have a T5 or a T20. That way it cannot stimulate, because he was winning the cast. His boy was winning the cast and got scratched because he had prongs on his dog and a 300 system. We told him he needed to go back tomorrow and either buy a T5X or a T20. That way they could not scratch him the next night. He said, I didn't understand it. I said, that's the rules. I said, which he was first starting out and got a new unit and those things. But he definitely did get scratched that night because of just not knowing that you couldn't run a stimulating collar with a stimulating unit.
Yeah, and that goes back to knowing the rules, because that could leave a bad taste in that boy's mouth for a while in competition hunting due to the fact of, I was winning the cast and they made me forfeit, quit, in other words, get scratched from a hunt just due to my handheld. If they would have knew the rules, they wouldn't been in that ever been in that situation.
And that also could have been a young kid that just started out. He might have won the entire hunt. You don't know.
I mean, you never know.
And that's a hard lesson to learn.
It's a hard pill to swallow.
Another
thing,
if that's all you have, you have the option to leave your handheld in the truck.
Correct.
You can get the collar on, leave the handheld in the truck. You can still hunt.
As long as you ain't got a spectator in your truck.
Yeah.
Yep. Correct. You're right.
No, and I think another thing needs to be said on that. 90% of the time, the master hounds or the hunt director, nine times out of ten around here, you'll hear them say, you boys know the telemetry rules. Well, not everybody does. And even at the big hunts, you'll, like UKC hunts, they'll say, you know the telemetry rules. Here's a copy of the sheet. Well, what's the matter with reading the rules out that way everybody knows it and keep going and knowing? And every time, I mean, people learn by repetition. That's just the way they are. So if they keep hearing it and keep hearing it and keep hearing it, they're finally going to get it and say, hey. But nine times out of ten, they'll just say, you know the telemetry rules and lay the paper down on the table. Yeah.
Especially in UKC, due to the fact that you are allowed to have a collar with prongs on your dog in UKC. In PKC and pro sport,
it's a lot easier to follow.
Everybody says it's T5s or you're scratched, period.
Right.
Which in UKC, I do agree. It'd be, they always say they got them on standby if anybody wants to read them, but it would do a lot more justice just to take an extra 5 minutes and read them over than nobody will have an excuse.
Yep. Now, Johnny said one thing, too, though, when he was talking about that master hounds or hunt director. That's another good point. All licensed hunts, you've got a person that's assigned to be in charge of that hunt. So they're kind of like your final authority to help any problems or disputes or questions or answer questions. So they do the kennel clubs, they do a good job having that person on staff at a hunt. It may be somebody from the local club most of the time that's coming in, just a local person, but they're qualified to do that and approved by the kennel registry.
I didn't know UKC changed to where they have hunt directors.
Yes, they did. So some of them do. Some of them have master hounds.
So I guess the difference between that would be a master of hounds, he does not hunt in the hunt. He stays at the club. And if a question appeals, he has the final say on the ruling of the question. A hunt director, I guess they will have a panel. They'll form a panel if a question arises. But that's the two different, I guess, directors of a hunt in UKC.
Yeah.
In PKC, in pro sport, everybody's hunt director. They'll have a hunt director at every one. And then if a question arrives, they'll form a panel. And a panel is 3 to 4 guys, and you'll present your question, and then they'll go to a back room and discuss it and come up with an answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. And the final answer is the final answer.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, that's how they do that. So, but it goes back to before you start, and we brought one in here just to set on the table while we was going through this. Get a rule book. They'll send you a rule book. You can pick one up at any local hunt. Any of the big hunts, they're going to have hundreds of them on the tables where you can get you one. But that's something that even us that's hunted forever, our whole lives, we still need to look at that and go back through it. And rules are revised on a regular basis. They do that on an annual basis. The stuff gets put forth throughout the year, and then it's brought in and voted, and that could come into the rule book for the following year. So something that we've known our whole life could change, and we've got to get on board with that when it happens.
Yeah, and a big thing, like reading the rules is one thing, and it's good. You need to read the rules because a lot of things will stand out. But going to these hunts and witnessing these hunts in action and putting them rules in situations is a totally different field, because it's one thing to read a rule, but it's another thing to apply it, because that rule that you're reading right now can apply in 5 to 6 different situations in the woods, as far as when they're twisted and turned different directions.
Yeah, I look at the rule book too, and another thing, when you go on them hunts and you let that, we've kind of got off track, you go out, they're going to get your dogs drew out. You're going to the woods. You're getting to hunt. The back of that scorecard also has the night hunt rules on it.
In UKC.
In UKC. So, like in the book's over. It's not a big book, but you get the book, and it's like, oh, man, this is a lot of stuff to learn. The night hunt rules is not the whole book. It's a section of it that you got to learn, and that's what's on there as well.
Correct. So, where was we at before we ran off on a little rabbit trail?
And, well, I'm going to add to your rabbit trail just a little bit first.
Johnny struck in.
I don't want first. I take second. But anyway, like you said, the rules are being applied, and that's just by going to woods, and you will learn some $25 lessons.
You will.
I mean, you will, and that's just the way it goes. And you set that in the back of your mind. But it's just like everybody has a different level of reading comprehension. I mean, some people can stick and they can read stuff, and it can stay with them. Some people has to read it, like I said before, repetitively. And everybody has a different level of reading comprehension, and that's just like applying these rules. You have a different level. Everybody has a different level of comprehension of what the rules sometimes mean or don't mean, but it, you will learn some $25 and $35 lessons mm-hmm. along the way.
I've learned a bunch of those.
Well, I'll say on them rules, too, you start thinking about those rules. It's no different than any, like we talked about other sports. It's all the same. There is a written rule book for all them sports.
There's got
to
be.
And when you bring these refs in to do football games at high school, they know the rules inside out. Johnny and I have got one guy we went to school with, Seth. You can sit at a ball game, and I'm sitting here, you know, and I feel like I know the sport inside out pretty good, and I don't get what's going on. He'll be like, oh, no, that was this and this rule. That's why they called that flag or they done that. So it's a, like Johnny said, it's a level of comprehension of knowing those rules. I mean, you get into some of the stuff these refs will call, I don't see it, but they know it because they know that rule book inside out.
Yeah, and what Johnny's referring to as a $25 lesson, we've all had them, many of them. I mean, I've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth. Is like we was going back to saying, if you can read the rules, but until you apply them, you really don't truly understand the rules. And
that lesson is you paid your $25 or $30 entry fee.
And they stuck the rule to you.
They just put a rule on you, and it's a legit rule. And
you just didn't know it.
Yeah, you'll remember it next time.
And when he's talking about comprehension, when you get them $25 lessons, they start sticking into you pretty quick, because you start dishing out money and you start learning.
You start learning them. We've never turned the dogs loose in a hunt yet, and we've already used enough time. We need to take a commercial break.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so we may not get a long ways into this, but it's good. I mean, it'll be good for people that's just getting started.
All righty, we'll hop off here, and we'll get back to casting the dogs. Coon Hunting Media is proudly sponsored by Little T Squallers.
Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I got him.
Them are the words every competition hunter loves to hear. You're winning, Coon. Has just been found. Little T Squallers, owned and designed by Tim Tempton, has set the bar for high quality, dependable, and unmatched performance. From pleasure hunters to extreme competitors, he covers it all with his five elite models. Original Little T, the Triple Threat, the Double Shot, the Pro Series, and the newly designed Bell Ringer. If you want to enter the woods with confidence, contact his office at 423-562-5333 and become elite.
In addition to our official sponsors, we would also like to thank the following sponsors: Secret City Kennels. The kennel is owned by Mr. Mark Gettner and Mr. Wendell Jones. At Secret City Kennels, they support the English Coonhound breed. They have English Coonhounds for sale from time to time. Contact Mark or Wendell for all your English needs. They are available for your English Coonhound advice and are happy to answer your questions. These guys have done their fair share of winning in the comp events, including wins at the PKC Labor Day Classic, 5th place overall in the UKC World Hunt, 9th place in the AKC World Hunt, English Days, Winter Classics, and the list goes on and on. Mark is the current PKC English Coonhound President. Give either of these guys a call. They will be glad to talk with you. Their numbers are Mark at 931-787-2784 or Wendell at 865-748-7795. They are located in Kingston, Tennessee, and Coalfield, Tennessee.
Saddle Up Canine Cryo is owned by Mr. Bill Scheninger. Bill is located in Delta, Ohio. Don't miss out on the opportunity to keep that special stud dog forever. His services include semen collection, freezing, side-by-side shipping, and semen storage. Bill is also the owner of one of the best-known plot kennels in the country, Saddle Up Plots. Saddle Up Plots is home to UKC, PKC, AKC, WTDA, Grand Knight Champion, PR Saddle Up Lazarus. Lazarus accomplished the following accolades in 2021. He was UKC World Champ Plot, Plot Days Isaiah Kid Winner, Purina Breed Winner, Autumn Oaks Breed Champion, APA Breed Days Winner. Fresh chilled and frozen semen is available. Contact Bill directly for all pricing and services information for Canine Cryo and Saddle Up Plots. Bill's phone number is 419-467-7689. Saddle Up Plots. Making plots rise again.
All right, we're back now. So we made it to the woods, getting dogs ready, collared up. Time to cut them loose. What goes on next?
Well, I guess the next thing to do is the time of the hunt. So all hunts will have a timer, which they have a 1 hour hunt, a 90-minute hunt, and then 2 hour hunts. A lot of your local hunts will have double headers, and they'll all be 1 hour cast. And then you'll go to 90 minutes, and then the bigger major events will have 2 hour cast. And what that is whenever you cut the dogs loose, the judge will say cut them. They'll start a timer, and that's your hunt time.
Yeah, and this is the part where it's really a sport. It's like a ball game. So now everything's under it's a clock. I mean, just like you've got in a regular game, you got timeouts, you've got different things going on. There's a set amount of time, and when that set amount of time is over, the ball game is over.
Yep.
And on a hunt, it's the same thing. It's a timer is going to go. We may have timeouts during that hunt, but everything's working off that clock. You got a timekeeper. And you've got that, like you said,
within that time to do your thing,
yep. Try to get the biggest score. It's just the same as a ball game. The at the end of the night, the highest score wins. We'll get into plus points and all that later. But at the end of the day, it's a score. It's scored just like different sports. Basketball's twos and threes. Football's, it's what
three, six, seven. Yeah.
I mean, there's different. Everything's got its amount of points and ones. You got all those in there. Coon hunting, the different registries, you got to – they're more in line now, but there have been different point systems. If you're hunting the different registry, you got to know how all that works, and that goes back to the rule book. Right. You need to know the rule book, because when I go hunt PKC, I got to go by the rules of PKC. When I go to UKC, I go by their rules.
Yeah, and what's good to that is they all have went to the same point system.
They have.
Which is good. That keeps everything getting lined out. So we've got the time – situation out. Everybody will line their dogs up in a line, side by side.
And then the judge kind of takes over there.
Will kind of take over, and he'll have his watch out, and he'll say cut them. And whenever you – or cut them, cast them. And at that point, everybody unleashes their dogs at the exact same time. And the rule that we get placed immediately is the one-minute rule. The one-minute rule is in all registries. And what it does is it gives you a one-minute grace period to not strike your dog. Strike. Another thing with strike is you get three barks to strike your dog. And what a strike is when a hound smells a coon or an animal.
Mm-hmm. It opens and it barks.
Open and they bark. And what that does is, and the first dog that gets struck, declared struck, which means called struck, will be for 100. Second for 75, third for 50, and then last for 25. And I guess another thing would be is you got to be declared struck. Just because your dog's barking,
you got to call your dog.
You call your dog, which means if your dog's name's Bo, you strike Bo. And so the one-minute rule will get placed immediately in the hunt. That gives you a one-minute grace period. The reason for that grace period is there's a rule set in place where if you do not strike your dog within three barks, you will get minus the available
if you don't call the dog.
If you do not call your dog.
And the thing on that note, the thing about it, like, and everybody goes pleasure hunting with their buddies. When you get different dogs together, even dogs that hunt together, sometimes they get real excited and you turn them loose, they take off barking.
Yep.
And they may not be after a scent yet. They get out there and then they stop barking. Well, if you called right away, you may have already used up a point that you're going to get minus on shortly. So that's why that rule.
Correct.
Is in place.
And so what that does is if all dogs can be barking, your dog can be barking, under that grace period, you can have the option to not strike. If you do strike your dog under that minute, there's a rule in place to where your dog has to carry that strikeout. If you do not carry your strikeout, that available will be minus. So,
I want to jump back and one more thing that you just said, you strike your dog, you call your dog. That's the whole thing is about the handler calling that animal. Yep. When that dog barks, we've always drilled it in all of our heads and everybody, when you call that dog's name first.
Right.
And then that way, because if a lot of times on these hunts, it's neck and neck and you and I are calling at the same time. And at the end of the day, whoever's name came out first.
Most of the time, we'll get that strike.
Most of the time, they're going to get it.
Especially from, I judge a lot of hunts, and hearing a dog hearing the handler say his name, there's dog's name, and then strike after, it automatically, that's who I point to immediately, just because I heard that dog first.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always a good little twist to put in there, a kind of a tip. Just always say your dog's name first.
And for these people that's listening that's not done this yet or going to try their first or whatever, there's going to be times you get into some of these places where there's hot coons everywhere. And you get on these bigger hunts, they're taking you to good places. I'll say they're taking us to the places that are loaded. And there's going to be coons there. And it's dogs are coming out of the box. And they're not just barking.
They're smelling coons.
You know there's going to be a race immediately. And I've seen numerous times where you're making decisions as a cast to split those points, because I'm seeing times when you're calling them at the same time, and sometimes you win, sometimes you don't win. I've watched, you know, Stacy at Automos last year, we're standing right beside him, and it was just neck and neck every time we dropped, because we were going to what I called loaded places every time we dropped. Sometimes he'd get it, sometimes the other guy'd get it, sometimes it would be like, yeah, we all said it exactly the same time. Yeah. I don't have a clue. We're just going to split these.
It comes down to a lot of knowing your dog. If you know your dog does not bark unless he is on a red hot coon or just he is running a track, if he barks under that minute, you're going to strike him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes to a lot of just knowing your dog. And if you know your dog is a little, what we call loose mouth or babbler, you're not going to strike under that minute because they're very liable to go out there 100 yards and then shut up, which is risking of them getting minus.
Okay, now what happens if you strike that dog in under the minute? It's not on a coon. What happens next?
What do you mean it's not on a coon?
He's saying you pull him out of the truck, Stacy. We're gonna say Stacy brought the babbling dog,
yeah.
And we turned him loose, and Stacy struck his dog. It's right
so
off
wait,
the truck.
Is he babbling loose mouth, or is he?
I struck my dog.
Or is he running jump?
He runs out there and quits barking.
Well, he's just saying for the listeners, what happens then?
Go next. We'll start the time on. What's the time?
You were struck under the minute.
He struck under the minute, and he stopped barking.
Whenever I struck my dog in, Okay, when I struck my dog in, he quits barking. He's the only dog that's barking. I struck him in, he quits. As a judge, you're going to step up here and put the time on him, okay?
Right.
When the time goes on him, that dog has, I think, 6 minutes.
In all kind of close.
To open up and bark again, or another dog has to strike in and keep a track moving. If he don't, on that 6 minutes, I'm going to pull minus.
Yep.
So if I strike in another minute, no one got a babbling dog, I strike him in, he runs out there and quits and don't hit a sign, then I'm going to start on six on it. I can easily eat 100 points really quick.
Yeah, well, it goes into a lot. If you've got a judge that is doing his rule and doing his job, if you strike your dog under the minute, then in my opinion, especially the way I judge, especially in PKC and pro sport, they really crack down on it. If you strike under the minute, they don't even have to put the six on your dog or you are going to get minused. In UKC, they're just a little more lenient on that, but especially in the bigger money in pro sport and PKC, if they ever start the six on your dog and you struck on the minute, just get ready to eat your minus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that goes back to that knowing the rules and knowing your dog. When you turn them loose, if you know that dog's going to be a loose mouth, babbling type dog, I would sit back until that dog, I know that dog struck, or like what he was talking about. If I've got a dog that I know is what I call an honest strike dog. When it opens its mouth, I know it's running. I'd have zero issue with striking under a minute because I know at that point that dog's going to carry that sign on out.
Yeah.
So that's something to know because we'll go back to that rule. It's all score system. There's a certain, for those that's never done this, there's a certain amount of minus points. You're done. It's like getting 5 fouls in a ball game.
Yep.
You're out. We've all done it. Every one of us. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I've never went out backwards because we have. In some point in a hunt, it's just happened. Yeah, have you never done that?
I've never went out backwards.
I'm either going to go forward or go backward one way. I'm not shy at it.
Stacy always says I'm here to win it. So, but it, I mean,
I'm going
to
do good or bad. You
swing for the fences every time.
That's right.
But if you took somebody out there that's not never competition hunting and they didn't know that and they started calling, it don't take long to start. If you started eating 100 minus, you're going to be done pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. In UKC, you get scratched for too much minus. But it's 400. It's so, accumulation.
It used to be 350, wasn't it, back in the day? Didn't it used to be 350? Was it all? Okay. I'm wrong on that one. I was in my mind, read the rule book.
Johnny's like the judge over here, the gavel.
He's a master of hounds tonight.
So we got dogs struck in. Now what's going on?
So let's say we've struck them, us four's hunting, and we've all struck our dog. So one of us has 100, one's got 75, one's got 50, one's got 25. Now what are we doing?
Everybody be listening. Listen for your dog because you're wanting a tree. Next part is treeing.
That's where you've
struck a coon. The next part is that thing going up a tree.
Because them strike points, they don't get you any positives or pluses behind it until we get to the tree or we catch a coon on the ground. And it's
I kind of liked how you did say and one in basketball. There's kind of and ones in coon hunting.
There is.
You strike and tree a coon, that's an and one. Mm-hmm. If you catch one on the ground.
We've had some of those too. We've had that in the past. Those dogs are not as prevalent, but you love it when you got one of them kind that occasionally does that. But so we're all struck in and we're waiting. So tell us what's going to happen.
So everybody's struck in. They're running. The dogs are running. You're listening, and we're waiting on the tree. And when your dog or somebody else's dog, and mainly the dogs we're hunting nowadays, they're by themselves, and we'll just take your dog, for instance. The dog you are handling, when you think he has became treed, which if you're hunting a hound, you know what treeing.
You know what treeing means.
You will declare your dog treed, which means whatever your dog's name, you say his name and then tree him. And what that would, and the next thing, the judge will, in all of the kennel clubs now, it's 125 tree. He will repeat your dog's name and then grant him the amount of points that he's allotted. And he'll start another timer.
As long as he can hear that dog tree. The judge has to hear that dog tree.
Yeah, and I like how you made that point. Whenever you strike a dog or tree a dog, everybody or the majority of the cast has to be able to hear that dog immediately before you call struck or treed.
And if they don't, they're going to call you out on that, and they're going to put you there. You're going to have to point and tell them, do you hear it? They're going to have to. They still got to hear it.
Yeah, and in PKC and in pro sport, you'll get minus the points that if you declare your dog struck or treed and they don't hear it, you get minus them points. Mm-hmm. In UKC, they just don't take your call. So I guess you've declared your dog treed, and they will start a 3-minute timer, which is in all kennel clubs now is 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is it gives the other dogs 3 minutes to tree in on that tree to get available points. And your dog has to stay treed for 3 minutes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is in UKC, the tree points will be 125 for first tree, which means you've declared your dog treed first. You'll get 125. And then second is 75, third will be 50, and then fourth will be 25. And what that is say I've treed my dog, then Jason trees his dog. And UKC, as long as they're treed in under 2 minutes, they will just get next available, which means I get 125, he'll get 75, and then so on.
Yeah, so, and you got into that point. That's a good point because that's changed in the past, relatively not too long in the past few years. But used to, the whole time it was open, all of them points was available. But it's called, progressive treeing. Well, UKC is all the same. It's after so much time you start losing available positions. And that's why I say they've come together on it, but that's something, knowing the rules.
Yeah.
So I know going in there it's 125, 75, 50, 25, but that only applies for a certain amount of time. It's all these little and ifs that go into it. So if Stacy's dog gets first tree, I've only got so much time. It's 2 minutes. I've only got 2 minutes to get that next.
2 minutes.
So then it starts falling back. So the tree is extremely important because that's where you can win the hunt. Johnny and I, we all talk about that all the time. I'll take I'll take an honest open strike dog that's getting a second instead of a first, because if I've got a first tree dog, I can pull ahead of you doing that, because there's more – the coon's at the end of the tree, so the tree's worth more than the strike points.
Yeah, and the UKC, you have 2 minutes to get whatever's available on that tree, which could be 75, could be 50, or it could be a 25. And after 2 minutes, it'll drop down. The only thing you can get is 25 for the last minute of that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And in PKC, in pro sport, it goes down every 30 seconds, which means the first 30 seconds, 75 is open. After a minute, only thing you can get is a quarter. It goes first 30 seconds is 75, and then after 30 seconds, 50. Yeah.
30 more seconds.
After 30 more seconds,
quarter.
Mm-hmm. So after the 3 minutes is up, the judge will say tree is dead. What that is saying is it's closed. No dog can get
anything.
Anything
points. Good. I'll say that. Nothing good.
He cannot get any extra, I guess you'd say that he cannot get any tree points on that tree.
So let's back that scenario up. So there's four of us. We're out there hunting, and you boys got first, second, third on that tree, and I did not get any of it.
Yep.
You're the judge, and you said tree is closed. Now what happens from that point, we're going to that tree. There is nowhere that I can get plus points because I didn't tree in that time frame. So I'm done. I'm called what you call shut out on that tree. I'm done with it. There is no more for me.
Yep. And a lot, I guess, a misconception you think about, only way you can have get your strike points on, I guess, the plus side
plus
or
side.
The minus side or the circle side on the end of the scorecard is to be able to have a tree,
except for the and if exception. So,
and
but
if,
yeah,
which is very very unlikely.
So yeah, and I'll say the plus side. You can't get the plus side without that. So if you go back to the strike points, if for some chance your dog caught the raccoon on the ground and we're able to see it, you can plus those strike points
only.
But outside of that, then strike points, if you want to,
they don't do you no.
They're going to do one of two things. They're going to go away or they're going to be minus.
Yep.
So.
Unless you tree. That's the only way you can get it.
So,
yep. Talk to us, Johnny.
You can get circled or plus if you're in the ground, too.
Yeah, but you're declared tree.
That's another.
In all kennel clubs but UKC, you have to be declared tree before you can proceed. But that's another rule in UKC. You can declare your dog in a hole and not call him tree. That's a whole other rule right there.
Yes, we could get into probably a lot of details.
So, I'll say that one for another time.
So at this point, then, tree's closed. You're the judge, and you've declared that tree closed or dead. We're going into the tree.
Yeah.
So then tell the listeners what happens at that point.
You will walk into the tree, and the judge will see the dogs treeing, and he'll say, most of them will say, I've got them, and then he'll say, handle them. Whenever you handle your dog, everybody will snap their dog on a lead and tie them back. Which means spread out the dogs, just off the tree where no ball can get to each other, and just tie them around a tree, snap them up and stuff. And then the judge will proceed for everybody to score. And what that will do is you have an 8 minute time to search the tree. And when everybody's ready, the judge will say, go ahead, and he'll start an 8 minute timer, and you can proceed to shine the tree, looking for a coon. And,
you also, if you declared your dog treed first, a lot of times the judge will ask you if you want your first two for the shine time, and then you have that option.
2 minutes.
Shine it by yourself for 2 minutes before you let anybody else put a light in that tree. Now, 9 times out of 10, you want everybody to shine. But on occasion, when leaves is on and things of that nature, you want to take your first 2 minutes, shine it yourself. See if you can find the coon first, because they will.
Bright lights out there.
They will keep if you're looking for a coon in leaves and you're looking with red lens and somebody throws a big bright light up in there, 9 times out of 10 that coon's not going to look. So you want to take your first 2 minutes. A lot of times, use your red lens, squall. See if you can get that coon to look at you. That way you can find him first before you let everybody else throw their light in the tree.
So let me ask a question then. So if we're hunting in the summertime. And I'm new, and this is my first rodeo in, and I'm going, it would probably be wise for me to take that 2 minutes because I don't know any of you guys. We're all strangers at that hunt, and I had first tree. I'm getting these first trees on you. There's a possibility that somebody would throw that light in there. I'm not saying most people won't, But there's always that one that one bad cat out there with you that they would just try to do something to keep you from being able to see that coon. So you, I would take advantage of that and use that first. Yeah. Or I would say, hey, boys, you can all go shine, but use a red light.
Yeah, out of respect.
A lot of times people do that. Just say, just use the red light only.
Yeah, and like Johnny said, mainly that you use your 2 minutes. I do during the whenever I see I got a big den tree, just head high. I'll say I want my first two, or if it's leaves on. Because like Johnny said, if you start throwing them big bright lights in them trees, them coons a lot of times won't look. Mm. And if you put a real dim light and you squall a little bit, they'll start looking, and you can find your coon and then proceed to shine.
I'm going
to
back up on you again. We walked into that tree. We've already kind of went into the shine time, but I'm kind of in my mind thinking about this as somebody that's not ever went hunting, and we're just kind of telling them some of the stuff. I'm going to go back and point at Kyle. You're the judge. We're all heading in there, and this is my first hunt. My dog got first tree. I'm all excited. What do I need to do when I run in there and grab my I don't need to run and grab my dog until what you said a minute ago.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That judge says handle the dogs.
Yeah, always make sure the judge sees your dog
treeing. On that tree, treeing.
And make sure, and always verify with the judge. A lot of times I'll just say, judge, you got me, or judge, you see me, mm-hmm. and he'll say, yes, I see you. Handle your dog. Because a big thing, if you just run in there and grab your dog and snap him up, that's a mandatory scratch.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's where I was going to get to it. I hate to see that happen to somebody that's new going into hunting, and they may be winning. They may have the best dog in that cast. And if I don't know any better and I run in there and grab my dog, some judges won't, but that judge has the right to pull me and scratch me on that, or it is, and it, that's going to suck because I may be sitting under a coon.
I mean, if the judge is doing his job the right way, you will be scratched.
The reason to doing that is so he sees what tree that dog's on.
Yep.
Yes. You know, it could be on a little bit small tree. You run grab it, say it's on a big tree.
Yep.
That's the reason of that rule is so the judge knows exactly what tree that dog's on, and if all dogs are on the same tree or the split tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they could be split treed right together.
They could be side by side different trees.
Yeah.
Now, another thing I don't know, because I don't go on as many of the hunts as you boys, I usually stay at the truck or don't drive at all. But if they go, how common is it now for people when you're getting started of just telling the judge at the first part of the hunt, hey, when we go into that tree, my dog might meet me off there. Is that kind of a thing of the past, or is that pretty much still everybody?
I still do.
I mean, I guess a lot of the dogs nowadays meeting off the trees is almost a thing of the past.
I mean,
there's still some dogs that meet handlers off the tree, but they're breeding for belly up tree dogs.
Yeah.
Well, and everybody's always alone.
Well, I'm just getting into some technicalities for somebody that's never been before, because me and Johnny's had it happen before. I mean, I've had to kind of drag him out of the woods, keep him from beating somebody to death because literally, I remember one night, dog was treed. We walked in, the entire cast walked in together, and he came off the tree maybe 4 feet, and he reared up on the grapevine that was as big around as your leg and just sat back on it and let down a big locate, and they minus us. They said the dog left the tree, and Johnny was like, you have got to be crazy. He's turned around and reared up on this grapevine that's going in the tree that's got the coon, and we pretty much almost had a loss of religion right there that night. So, I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, I think you need to be right there with the judge, and that you need that judge to let you need to hear them say, handle that dog.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's just the one good thing, and a lot of things to go ahead and get out when at the beginning of the cast, when you're walking to your dog, if your dog does something a little different, as far as meet you off or sit back on a tree, because some dogs sit off that tree about 3 foot when they're treeing, go ahead and just tell the judge that so he knows what to be looking for.
All right, so we sidetracked on that. So now that we're treed, you got your shine time, you got your option to use that 2 minutes of the 8 by yourself, and you go on. So now we found the coon. Coon's been seen, and does everybody have to see the coon?
So in a four dog cast with a hunting judge, three people out of that cast has to see the coon. In a three-dog cast, two people out of that, when hunting judges being used, two people have to see the cast. And a lot of times, especially in the bigger hunts or big money hunts and the final fours, they'll have what they call a non-hunting judge, which means he has no dog in the race. His job is strictly to judge that cast. And what he says goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that situation, only he has to see the coon. And I guess another thing to point out real quick would be, when a hunting judge is being used, they'll be voting. They'll be voting throughout the cast on situations would mm-hmm. be, I guess, say there was not, you cannot find a coon, and say some leaves are on, they'll have a vote, which will be a circle tree or a minus tree, mm-hmm. which means could there be a place of refuge where that coon could be hiding? And they'll vote, and they'll be voting throughout the cast on different situations. But that's when a non, that's when a hunting judge is being used.
So we found that coon, and so we're going to back up, and we're going to go through, and we've had a group of four. Three of us have seen it, so we're good. Yep. Everybody's seen it but me, and I'm the one over here. I didn't see it. Don't matter if I seen it, because three of you guys saw that coon.
The majority of the cast.
So now, most of the time, well, it depends on where you're at. If you're moving spots, they're going to call timeout. If you're not moving spots, they're just going to pull off and recast. But before we go, they're going to, everybody's going to agree that they've tallied them scores into there.
Right.
And that's where the plus or the minus points come in.
Yep. And
or circle.
Or circle. So now tell, so if we shine that tree, spin our 8 minutes, and let's just say it's the winter time, leaves are off, we found a big hole in that tree big enough to put a soccer ball in. What we gonna do on that tree?
They would declare that as a circle tree. And what a circle tree is that you don't get no minus and you don't get no plus, which means you're not penalizing the dog, but you're also not rewarding the dog.
Right.
If that makes sense. Because there could be a place where a coon could be a hiding, I guess you could say. Johnny's pointing at something.
He's pointing at my phone, so we better take another quick break. We're 45 minutes in, so let's take one last break, and then we'll
finish shining this tree.
We'll finish shining this tree.
Sounds good.
Dakota Lock Company, owned by Hoop and Tater Franklin, located in Tellico Plains, Tennessee, with the newest addition to their lineup, the Dakota Express. This lock features the industry-leading True Dual Battery Pack cap light. Switching from battery 1 to battery 2 is a simple flip of a switch. Contact Dakota Lights for their complete light selection. All of their lights are known for dependability and extreme battery life. Their direct business number is 423-261-2551. Dakota Lights, great lights, and even greater customer service.
Dillon's Electric Company, owned by Ricky Dillon, located in Crossville, Tennessee. Dillon's Electric offers a wide range of electrical service, from small jobs to large expansions, from new construction to electrical repairs. Give Ricky a call at 931-287-4761. Dillon's Electric, a quality you can always trust.
All right, we're all come back. We're fixing to get in the scoring this tree that we're fixing, that we're shining.
Okay, so my question was, we went into this tree. I might even change it around how we did. So we went in, and the four of us are on the cast. You three have all treed in. We've shined the tree. We've seen the coon within that 8 minute time frame. My dog's still out running around. So now, what are we doing on this tree? What? As it sets right now, what
your dog's probably running a deer right now.
That's a good possibility.
You just saying. I mean, I'm just saying that happens. I mean,
well, let's just ask this question: did he do a good job running the deer?
Absolutely.
That's all that matters.
He almost caught it. He didn't.
So we've got to this tree. You three are treed in. We've shined the tree. We found the coon. Now what happens? So that's where the plus points start coming in. Plus points,
which mean strike and tree would be plus. So what that's going in saying, one dog was struck for a 100 and was treed for 125, you would add that up. So he has 225 plus on that tree. And then say dog B was 75 and struck for 75 and treed for 75, he'd have 150 plus on that tree. And then so forth. You just add your strike and tree up on that tree.
And you can switch around where you strike and tree at. I mean, far as a dog struck in first, could tree last.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You don't know.
It's just whatever available.
Yeah, and that's how your points come together.
Right. And the other thing about those points, that's why we say the tree is so important, because you can take that dog that's not getting that 100 on that strike, but if it's a first tree dog, you're going to win most of the time. Because
you're jumping 50 points every tree.
Every tree. And you just start digging out. So I'm going to go back now. Let's throw some more scenarios to this, to the people. And like I said, I know this is redundant stuff for all these people that competition up, but now we're thinking about this as people that's not done this before. You guys have treed, and time's run out on the tree, and we're there shining that tree. My dog quit running the deer and decided to come in. And while we're all standing there shining, a closed tree, three dogs are scored or in, my dog shows up, and that coon got seen. What happens to me?
So the first thing, whenever your dog comes in, so it has to be during the process of shining.
I'm going to throw you two scenarios. We're at the first scenario. Okay, first scenario, we're shining. We're all standing there.
So nothing's been found. Everybody's shining the tree.
We're shining.
It's within shine time.
It's within shine time. And my dog finally decides to quit running the deer and comes to the tree.
Right.
And you guys seen the coon.
So the first thing would be whenever the judge or anybody in the cast sees that dog come into the tree, and he has to be at that tree. You have a lot of people come with scenarios saying canopy of the tree, stuff. He's got to be at that tree. The judge will say, handle your dog, and you'll handle him and tie him back as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll proceed to shine the tree. Then, like you said, the coon was seen.
Mm-hmm.
So what that goes into will be, in all kennel clubs, that strike will be minus of whatever dog has came into that tree.
So you guys all just got plus on your strike, plus on your tree, and I just drew me a bunch of minus.
Because your dog came in late.
So now I'm going to back up one more scenario for them. So we've not made it to the tree, and those dogs are treed in, and you've all declared your dog's treed. Johnny's over here hurting, and he keeps giving these looks. I'm not sure if he's after me or not. But so your dogs are all declared treed,
yep.
And my dog came in, and I did not declare it treed. I'm going to go back. My dog was running the deer, and it decided to quit running the deer, and it came in. So now we're going to walk to the tree. Before it scored, you're going to walk into the tree, and my dog's there too, but I'm not treed in.
Okay, and you're not treed in.
I'm not treed in.
So in UKC, your strike's minus immediately.
That's why I'm asking the questions. For the people that's not listening, because the one scenario, you had to find that coon because my dog came in after the fact.
Right.
The other scenario, my dog came in before, and it's an automatic. So for people that's just getting started, there's difference. It's another part of those rule plays, but it happens a lot. This kind of stuff does happen.
So in the rules, in the UKC rule book, I miss as close to word for word, it says a dog treed but not declared treed prior to the judge's arrival, which is the scenario you just gave,
yes.
Which means your dog is in there treeing and not declared treed, and the tree's closed, and the judge is not at that tree yet. Your strike will be minus immediately when that dog was handled.
When we arrive. And so that's why I wanted to ask those questions.
That's the big thing. The dog has to be handled at that tree.
Yes.
Just because your dog goes in there and maybe trees for 20 seconds and then leaves, you're fine.
You're fine.
Your dog has to be handled. And another part to that rule, it says a dog, like you said, comes in after the judge's arrival, the coon will have to be seen.
Yes.
If not, your strike will be what they call deleted, which just means washed away.
Yes. Now I'm thinking some other stuff, just because of those scenarios can kind of be the same thing. Or same rules could apply to you, or the point system. We're out here running the dogs. They're all struck in. What?
You're getting awful deep for
I'm just trying to throw some scenarios that are going to happen. This stuff's going to happen to somebody on the first hunt. So we're out here hunting. We've got our dog struck in. And I'm struck in for 100. And then all of a sudden, my dog comes back to that cast. That's another time. It comes to me. It comes right up wagging its tail.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to me right there?
So you're talking about if we're just out there and dogs are struck, and then your dog comes into the cast.
Comes into that cast.
So what that goes into is it talks about quitting its track.
Mm-hmm.
So say your dog is, just say he struck a coon, and he is declared struck for whatever point system he is. Mm-hmm. He struck 100, 75, 50, or 25. And he quits his track and comes into the cast. His strike will be minus.
That's another minus situation. And I know
I like to point that out. Coming into the cast would not get you minus in certain situations.
Correct. Because
sometimes that cast will be standing on top of your track. Your dog has to show signs of quitting the track,
mm-hmm.
which means he might come in there and look up at you or just kind of just nosing around, pilling around.
Keep on going.
He's not running the track. He's minus.
Mm-hmm.
But if he runs to that cast running wide open, you know, wah, 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 running. He's running the track. He's not quit his track.
Mm-hmm.
So coming into the cast doesn't get you scratched. It's quitting your track and coming into the cast.
Mm-hmm. And I know I might get into a little bit deeper things, and I won't get no deeper. But those are all scenarios that I guarantee you are going to happen on somebody on their first few casts. Yeah. I mean, it does happen, and it especially happens with, let's just say, a bunch of us boys are hunting regularly, and I've got my pleasure dog. We don't think nothing about that because you train these dogs to not do that on these hunts. But when that dog comes in on a hunt, the judge is going to put the rules to me, and it's a legitimate rule, and then I'm going to draw minus points on that. So all right, yeah. I quit getting so deep.
Here's another thing. If you got a good judge, he will try to explain some of that to you as you're going along.
Yep.
That's a good judge. Some of these other judges will not explain nothing to you. They'll right. let you learn on your own. But I would say a good judge, that somebody that's got somebody in their cast for the first time, will show them, will tell them, look, your dog come in, your dog stood here and looked at me, he's minus. Now, if he comes through the cast, like Kyle was saying, barking and going on his way, then he's not minus. But a good judge will explain some of that to younger hunters. Some of them won't, but a good judge will.
Yeah, I like how you said, a good judge, whenever he notices he's got a young handler, or just, you ain't got to be young, just I call him a newbie to the sport, you're new to the sport, and you don't really know the rules, a good judge will explain why he's, what he's doing, and why he minused you, and so forth. Mm-hmm. When you get into casts where they know, everybody knows what they're doing, it's just cut and dry.
Mm-hmm. Well, go on. I like to look at what Johnny said. That's a good point, a good judge. I go back to one of the very first hunts Hudson was handling on, and we had a good judge, and we were trying to stay back and not get involved too much with it, and the dog was obviously getting ready to load up, and she was loading up. And that judge looked at Hudson and said, you got X number of time left. And he's like, I'd probably tree that dog because it was a win situation. The dog was going to win. That judge even was helping him out as a young hunter because he knew that he was legitimately going to, he should have won that. And if he hadn't have said that, he might have, or he might not have got that dog treed in and got it scored on, or got it on the paper, as we like to call it, in time. But that was a good judge. He was a good, honest judge. And he's like, I'd go ahead and get that dog treed if I was you. So he grabbed the tree and won the hunt that night.
I tried to help one out one time like that. And I told him, if you bear dog's tree, I'd tree him in. He treed his dog in. He packed his bags up and left and took minus. He thought I screwed him. I wasn't really. I was just trying to help him out. And he's like, man, you made me tree my dog. We're trying to explain
a good judge, and then you got the other judge.
Heck, I was trying to be nice, and I was trying to help him out, and he thought I...
And that judge is really one of our sponsors.
Actually is. Yes, he is. Well, he's tied into that. With
his dogs, yes. That's a super nice guy.
Who are you talking about?
Alex was the judge. It was one of the first cast hunts.
Alex's dog got out of pocket, and I went with him a mile and a half, kicked him out of a drain tonight.
Yes.
He was hung up in a drain.
He had a coon.
You know, storm drain.
But that's a good judge, though.
He's a good judge.
That's a good judge, though, that's doing that for a young... And I want to see him treat him that way. I mean, that's good because then you learned that lesson. You moved on with it because maybe or you maybe not would have got that call. And if you hadn't got that call, we wouldn't have won that cast.
Right.
And youth. And I think PKC does a good job with the non-hunting judges on youth cast because they know the rules. They apply the rules. And they're non-biased. They're supposed to be non-biased. Right. They don't have a dog in the race. And I've been on a couple of casts with youth that I just sat back and let the judge do the judging and don't bicker and complain and just let them be cut and dried. We went to the PKC World Hunt this week, and we ran up on a judge that was cut and dry. It is what it is. He was a good judge. He called it the way it was. He minced his dog right off the bat. He made a tree, looked it up. Throwed his light up in there. Another boy in the cast asked him, said, what are you going to do? He said, it's minus. Let's go. Yeah. I mean, a judge like that, you can't beat. Right. And he was just cut and dry. You know, he went by the rules. He know the rules. And he went on about his business.
And I like how you mentioned the youth cast. And a good youth judge will always apply the rules the way they should be applied, but it always explain to them why them rules were applied. Because the biggest thing I've seen is a lot of times they'll, you know, you ain't got to be as strict, but they let a lot of stuff slide. And if you keep letting everything slide, a lot of times them handlers will get used to that stuff sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't realize exactly what they're doing wrong until that rule gets applied. But, yeah, for sure, yeah. Explain to them.
Well, a good judge is a good judge. The way it works, and it's the same thing in all sports. We watch ball games. A referee that they call it fair all the way through, you don't have as hard a time taking a loss in those situations. I always have dealt with livestock. Livestock judging the same way. It don't matter if you go to horse shows, cattle shows, goat shows, sheep, any type of livestock. A judge that makes their decisions and then they will explain why they made those decisions, it's a whole lot easier to take second, third, fourth, fifth place when they're putting in perspective what they're doing. Coon hunt same way. They're putting it in perspective to what that rule book says, and it's if they explain it, you cut down on the arguments tenfold yeah. by making those explanations.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like as when you're getting in the cast, you know, things get, I guess you'd say, fast paced and going. A lot of times I'll explain to them, maybe after the cast, you know, explain to them why I did that and what you've done wrong and what you can do next time to avoid that minus or whatever went on. But what's next?
Well, I think we're getting close to wrapping it up for tonight, but I will say what you just talked about there too. For somebody that's not done it before, It seems like it's a little bit overwhelmed, but it's really not.
It's really not.
Study that part, but it does get fast paced. I mean, even for us that's tagged along on hunts and done hunts for me and Johnny and Stacy, we're getting into 25-30 years of it. You guys have been doing it for several years. It gets hard to keep all that stuff in your head,
right?
Because it does get fast paced, especially when you get on some of these bigger hunts like we're going to. You went to PKC World, or you go to Autumn Oaks, or you go to some of these large ones. They got you in good spots, and it's not necessarily going out treeing one coon.
Six, seven,
you take like
eight.
You take me and Stacy's cast at Autumn Oaks. How many coons did we score in 2 hours? Nine?
Nine, I think.
When you score nine coons, it is hard to keep up with that in your head. And everybody knows I'm always about numbers. I'm number this, number that. I'll take a thing and write it down because there's no way I can keep up with what your score is and his score is in my head. And just keeping it wrote down, and it helps you keep track of what's going on, yeah. Because you got to know. I mean, it's a number. It's a chess game. It's a time chess game. I mean, everything's about, you know, like you
all
said,
strategies.
It's all strategies. There's times, and we won't even get in it because I would be going down another rabbit hole, and Johnny would be over here like, you're getting too deep with those questions. But those are all things. But it's timed, and you got to think fast, and you're going to mess up. There's times you're going
to. And like you said, it's going to look overwhelming when you look at these rule books, but a lot of these, there's a lot of just basic rules, and 6 out of 7 out of 10 cast, it's going to be cut and dry, just the old basic rules. But a lot of these rules are set in place for situations that came, and they may happen every 50 cast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where them rules, there's all these rules in here are set in place, and as you hunt more cast and be on more cast, them situations will arrive, and then that's when you'll learn them, I guess, more extensive rules.
I'm going to throw something. Well, go ahead, Johnny.
Some $25 lessons I was talking about.
$25 lessons add up, though. I mean, they help you.
They do help.
It's a learning curve.
They do.
Hey, I got me a $200 lesson one time.
And something really helped me a lot. I mean, over the years, I've hunted these a lot of times. But I got a friend. His name's Craig. I've hunted Craig a lot of years. I draw him about every hunt I went to. I draw Craig. He's always been good about explaining stuff. Like I say, explaining stuff out. For these new hunters coming in, it works good a lot of times.
It does.
To go in and just go to a club, not that you're hunting, just go down to a club, watch how it works. Sometimes they'll let you spectate.
That's a good idea.
They may not let you shine a tree. You have to be set back, be quiet, but you can watch what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you can find a cat to go with and some of the guys to go on with.
That'll take a lot of the pressure off when you do want to get
in. Knowing how it works.
Yeah. I would say every club, but in your area, they would allow you to go on probably as many casts as you would want to.
Yeah.
At the beginning, just to watch.
Especially if you got some good places to hunt, they'll make you be a guide.
That's right.
Yeah, especially if you got good hunting, they pay you time.
Now here's something else that I'm going to throw out there because I, like I said, we're treating this whole thing as to the people, we're pointing it to the people that's not done this before and want to get into it. Something that Stacy and Johnny and I have done, and they're going to remember it very well. We've done it 1,000 times when we were your all's age. We used to bring a stack of scorecards home from the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. We had a just a buddy hunt. Right. We would go hunting, you know, all your buddies, you're hunting every night. We would have a competition coon hunt every night we went, and we would try to put ourselves through them scenarios, and we would have our stopwatch, and we'd have us a scorecard, and we'd go through. And there was sometimes if we'd get into something and not even know exactly how it should have been scored, we'd make notes on that scorecard. Mm-hmm. We'd take it back, and we'd talk to the boys at the clubhouse. Yep. The next time we went to a club, we'd like, okay, we're practicing this, and this is what happened. How would you have scored that?
Yeah, yep. I like that idea, and that's the thing that we've done. Well, I've done a lot. We'd have a bunch of boys I went to school with and stuff. Now, we'd get in there, we'd have our buddy hunts, and we didn't put entry fees up. And but we'd have a lot of just regular just hunts. We just have a cast of dogs, and we'd treat it with the whatever rules that we wanted to use, UKC, PKC, mm-hmm. and we'd go by them rules, and that's helped me a lot, especially when I was first starting.
You get out with your buddies, and you have a scorecard. They'll give you scorecards at the club.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and take some of those with you and try to run that as close as you can to that score, to that rule book, and you will learn a lot just out pleasure hunting with your buddies.
A lot of $25 lessons be free then.
Yeah. I mean, you might have two.
That's true.
You know, back in the day when we did it, there was no such thing of anything but a 2-hour hunt. I mean, we were just after the days of 3-hour hunts. That's what it used to be. I don't know if anybody, I'm not going to say the dog, but people, we're not man enough to do that anymore as a whole.
Not in the mountains. Now, yeah.
But you could do, you know, you might do 2 1-hour hunts in a pleasure hunt night practicing. But I would say that for people that's not done it before, get you some scorecards and go out with your buddies and have a pleasure hunt. Turn it into a competition. Don't get mad at each other because you're still buddy hunting. But go through that to learn the score.
Oh, we used to have full blown fights. We used to do. Well, you know, you get your best buddies, you know, from school. They go out and you're competing against each other with your dogs. Oh yeah, we used to get riled up because everybody wants to win. You know,
that's right.
You always want to beat your buddy.
I'm first to last. That's just it. First to last.
All right, so have we got enough basic stuff that somebody would have a little understanding that don't know anything?
At least they can make it to their first tree.
Make it to their first tree and get there and get it done.
Yeah, they can make it to the first tree.
And then for all of those people that listen to us that do this all the time, we're sorry.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah, this will be a multi-part segment. We'll have four at least more down the road, and we'll get into not so much of the basic rules, but a lot of the in-depth rules and interpretations of them rules and some situations that you can get in. On how to interpret them rules later on.
And here's another thing I'll say. A $25 UKC hunt or a $35 PKC hunt or a $55 PKC hunt is not worth ruining your image with a kid in a cast. To be arguing,
preach it,
fighting, carrying on. The kids is out there to try to learn. The kids are out there to try to see if they want to be in this sport. And you being a hind end to your buddy or somebody across the way is not going to be a way to get kids into the sport.
Absolutely.
And we are a dying breed of people. I mean, you just look on every hand. They want to do away with this. They want to do away with that. For us to be able to make it in this sport, we have to have a younger generation. And by showing your tail end at these hunts for $25 or $35, there's no way to interest a child into becoming a competition coon hunter.
As well said.
Very correct. Absolutely.
I like how you, I'll chip in on that. Just I like how you said that. If you're going to go out there, and when you do got younger kids or just getting you into the sport, they're going to be letting a little few things slide, and they're not going to be doing everything as strict. If you want to go out there and be as strict can be, go pay a higher entry fee and go out there and play with the big boys. Is the way I look at it.
Yeah.
They'll make sure everything goes straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't turn these young people away from this. That's probably the most important thing.
And going by the rules.
Or teach them bad ways of doing it.
And there's ways of going by the rules and being respectful about it and explaining about it and not turning things into issues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, competition hunting can be fun. It's a blast. It's nerve wracking, but it's just like a sport. How many if you played sports and you do you get that pregame jitters and so forth. I'm the same way competition hunting. I get nervous, especially in the bigger hunts, just following along behind and watching. But
you get them butterflies.
You get butterflies. I mean, that's one of those things. You're going to get nervous. I mean, you're competing, but it is fun. It is a it's a very fun way to spend an afternoon or an evening.
I will give a fair warning, though. This is it's highly addictive.
Would you say you boys have about broke us up?
Yeah, it's highly addictive. So.
So, all right, we're going to end it on that? Is that as far as we want to go to that? We're going
to wrap her up. Sounds good to me.
All righty. We appreciate everybody listening to another Coon Hunt Media podcast, and we'll get back on the next one.
Have a good night.
Good night.